Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist! Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius, live, fit, go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
The new Chicken Bacon Ranch Street Chalupa is a Taco Bell. You can't get just one. Okay, so that's not like some marketing hyperbole. You literally can't get just one. They come in twos. So like, if you want just one, you're going to need to find a friend who loves slow-roasted chicken, bacon, and avocado ranch sauce. Or a friend of a friend, or have an awkward conversation with a complete stranger to see if they're obsessed with chicken, bacon, and avocado ranch. Or you could just like eat them both because you're obsessed with slow-roasted chicken, bacon. Okay, you get the idea. The new Chicken Bacon Ranch Street Chalupa is a Taco Bell. At participating Taco Bell U.S. locations for a limited time while supplies last.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
Hey guys, before we start, a quick shout out to Alpha Dog Nutrition for sponsoring this podcast. Alpha Dog products are now available at dusupply.com, and you can use code ALPHADOG15 at checkout for 15% off and a credit for free shipping to try it yourself. Now let's get you to your podcast.
Welcome to my podcast, where we are going to talk about a lifestyle with dogs and throw in a few life lessons along the way. Whether you're a hound hunter, a bird dog enthusiast running setters, pointers, retrievers, or a flat-out running dog junkie, this podcast is for you. I am your host, Heath Hyatt, a certified law enforcement canine trainer with over 3 decades of personal and professional training and handling experience. It's time for me to pay it forward. So grab your leads, lace up those boots, and come and join me on this lifelong process of teaching, training, and learning all types of hunting dogs. Do you like to be outdoors like I do? Hunting, fishing, hiking? If so, OnX is the app for you. I've been a loyal OnX user since 2013. It's the one app I can honestly say I use daily. While hunting, I know where I'm at all times. I mark trails, feeding, bedding areas, and the list goes on. When I'm traveling, I use it to pre-scout all the new places that I'm blessed to hunt. While out west hiking Yellowstone, I knew exactly where every trail went and the difficulty of each one. And here's a secret. I even use it to mark my favorite fishing spots. It's been a game changer at work. I've used it numerous times to get in touch with property owners. I even landed MedFlight one time in the middle of nowhere using the GPS coordinates. OnX has so many great features and tools, you can literally use it for everything. It is by far the best mapping app on the market. So get started with OnX today using K920. That's a letter K, number 920, and know where you stand. Today, Wednesday, we are going to be talking to Travis Legler, and I'm going to let him explain what he does because he travels all over the place. But it's interesting that we're going to have this conversation because I just got off the phone with another officer that runs hounds, and we're having the same conversation. So this is definitely piquing some interest in the hound and law enforcement crossover. And Travis and I had a conversation a week or two ago about the difference in dogs, and we'll get into that in a little bit. It's going to be pretty interesting for me especially, but you hound guys, you're going to find out how fortunate you are that you don't have a lead attached to that dog, because it makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, Travis, give us a lowdown. What you got?
Well, my name's Travis Legler. I've been in law enforcement for 24 years now, and I've worked a variety of different, I've worked for three different agencies. Currently work for a land management agency, and we focus on resource protection and things like that. Prior to that, I worked for Border Patrol, and I run hounds for lion and sometimes bear out here on the west side of the Rockies, based out of southern Utah.
So, you've been going back and forth to the border doing some tracking, haven't you?
Yes, sir. We go down and support Border Patrol operations as an agency, and we go down and tie in with those guys and partner up with them and go down and help and do apprehension work and tracking and disrupting the flow and targeting the mules and the drug runners.
So let me ask you, because I've said this on the podcast several times. I love running bear. There's nothing more, you know, exhilarating to me. It's awesome, and I can't imagine myself not doing it. But when you catch a human that's trying to avoid you, that has the same mental capacity that you have, it's hard to top that.
It is. And it can, it plays in most of us, I think, probably when we're running our hounds, we're hunting during daylight hours. Mm-hmm. And of course, a lot of stuff that we do is after dark, you know, or in the wee hours of the morning or the waning light of the day.
So are y'all running nods?
Yeah. Yep.
Night quads vision or multiples?
So we do, a lot of stuff is on foot, but we'll do some UTVs and things like that that have blackout mm-hmm. capability to work our way in closer mm-hmm. to a group. And then take off on foot from there.
So yeah, are you running dual tubes, quads, monads? Which one?
So mine's a dual single, so it's got mm-hmm. you know, both eyes, and then it combines down into a single. And then most of our thermals are just a single monocular.
Yep. Yeah, it's funny that you say that because we just got through teaching our tracking class last week, and the last day of our training is we run. Evening into the nighttime, and we give the teams resources. We give them the drone resource, which is phenomenal. Most of your TAC guys that's in the class, they're running nods. Most agencies are getting up to speed with that, which are getting some pretty nice the white phosphorus nods. And when I teach the class, I mean, I always say that tracking in nighttime is like a two-edged sword. It is your best opportunity to surprise the suspect. And at the same time, if you're not equipped to run blacked out, it is the worst time to track because you have lights, too much yep. stuff going on, and it's so dangerous. So it's like, if you can run blacked out, then yep. it's a lot safer, the element of surprise, right?
And that white phosphorus was a game changer. When the first night vision that I ever got issued was the, you know, the old green stuff and the depth perception and things like that just was terrible. And white phosphorus is just a game changer. I mean, the depth perception's there, so you're not tripping over every little thing that you walk across. And you can literally just walk right in on people and you can see them making motions with their hands and their face and trying to listen for you and things like that. And you walk right up onto them and then hit the old switch on the side of the helmet that shines white light. And, you know, their eyes are like a deer in the headlight, just wide eye. And most of them don't even know what to do because you're so close to them at that point, they don't really have a choice to run.
Yeah, they don't have time to think. The first time we had a company come in and they brought us the dual tubes and the IR lights to put on the end of the rifle. So what we done with that training session is we would put somebody in the wood line and we would bring the team up and we would just run a linear, just a straight line. And we would just, okay, when you pick them out with the nods, shine your light. And then we actually started using the FLIR to show the thermal. We started using it some, but man, when you shine that thermal, when you shine that IR on them, like you can't, I mean, it's there and they have no clue. And our track layer, like we surrounded him, like literally surrounded him, and he was hidden pretty good. And we literally, like you said, we were standing 2 foot away and everybody lit him up. And I swear he said he about peed his pants. He said it was that intimidating. He was like, holy cow. Like I didn't even hear y'all coming.
Right. Well, they make some pretty fancy IR stuff nowadays. You know, we all run an IR white. It's a dual light on our helmet.
And we've also got the IR
handheld lights as well. So, you know, if you need to get down and look at the ground or if you get real thick brush or something, you can really throw some light into that brush and see a lot better than, you know, just looking through the nods on a dark night.
Yeah. And I actually run on my headlamp. I've got an IR strobe. So if we have aviation up, which we don't do often, but if we have aviation up, they can pick us up and then we'll put, we've got a strobe that we can put on the dog's vest too. Do y'all use that?
So we run a strobe on every person that's out there, including the canines, so that they're readily identifiable by with not only us that are on the ground, but like when we're working with Border Patrol and stuff, a lot of times they have a scope truck up, you know, on a hill somewhere and they're out watching. And so then they can quickly identify, you know, agent versus, you know, suspect and say, hey, agent on the right, wave your hand or something like that. And, you know, and just to confirm that it's you or whatever, and then move in on what they're seeing in their scope.
Yeah. I mean, that's all the cool stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, it's all the cool stuff. You know, I'm a little jealous. If I had 24 years in, I'd be counting my days. Like it would be in the days that I could bug out, but I'm not there yet. I'm in 21, so I got 4 years left. But you know, we do it, you know, I sometimes take for granted that I've got the best job in the world. Like out teaching last week, you know, we've got canines come in from some different agencies and we're taking these teams and showing how we operate with the dog and how to do that. And like, I could literally do that every day of my life. Cause I love it.
Yeah. It's a blast.
It's not working for me.
No, it's a lot of fun. We teach, the local sheriff's office here in the county I live in, they teach a tactical tracking class every year that I've been fortunate enough to go to every year and help teach that class. And so they don't implement the canine into it, but they bring officers from mostly the West, but a couple years ago, we did get a couple officers out in Maine and further away coming through this tracking class. It's a 4-day class. We're all camped out in the hills and it's just all tracking all day, every day. And then a big scenario on the last day where they actually go in and do, you know, a mock fugitive apprehension.
And that's all visual.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, cool. I got to get in that.
It's all on the ground. It's, you know, you start out with baby steps. You start out day one. You know, we show a video. The county shows a video on why they do it. You know, they had an officer that was slain in the line of duty back in 2010. They were teaching this class even before that, but it took a new meaning on for them. You know, they took new purpose for them. And so they bring in, you know, an officer that has been involved in an officer involved shooting and had to track a suspect. They bring them in to talk and say how critical it is for tracking and things. Mm. And then we start out with, you know, the spore pit and, you know, there's one PowerPoint. There's like an hour long PowerPoint on identifying sign and, you know, and going through the different terminology, spore and, you know, tactical movements with your team and things like that. We go to the spore pit, then we go to the micro tracking, and then we start laying tracks and we break up into teams and instructors. We usually have 2 to 3 instructors for every six to eight students. And we just take a group and we head out into the open country and we chase our rabbit. You know, the rabbit lays multiple trails. They may hide up in a tree. They may hide under a rock. They may try to backtrack, double back on you, get behind you to test the strength of your team that's tracking, you know, your flankers and your rear guard and things like that. So it's a really good class. It's been very, very fortunate to be able to implement into that. And the county welcomes me every year to come help teach.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So let's get into why we had a conversation, and it all comes back to tracking.
Yep.
So lay it out there, and then we're just going to work through it again.
All right. So I reached out to I reached out to Chris first, and he said you'd be the better one to talk to. So I reached out to you, and, you know, my question was, is I work a lot with canines from, you know, several different agencies and, you know, dual purpose tracking, drug detection, whatever the case may be. And it always has baffled me why those, you know, German Shepherds or Malinois, and I just use Shepherd as a general term, but it could be a Shepherd or a Malinois, give out so fast, you know, when they're in those situations, you know. And that's what kind of prompted our conversation and me reaching out to you, is just figuring out why, you know, our hounds will run for, you know, out here in the West, you know, you can trail a lion for 18 miles and not ever catch up to it, and the dogs are ready to do it again the next day. And, you know, you might trail an illegal down along the border with one of the canines, and after 30 minutes, 45 minutes, the dog is smoked, and then you're just doing it by, you know, sight and doing it on, you know, the old school way. So that's the original reason I reached out to you about it, to kind of discuss the differences between the hounds and the law enforcement canines.
And, you know, I think about that a lot, and I've told my group this, and I'm probably repeating something I've said on a prior podcast, but I feel like we don't get half of the capabilities out of our police dogs. One, because very few people actually know what they're capable of.
Right.
You and I, we see our dogs running across mountain ranges and from daylight till dark and having to cut them off. And we see that. And we see, you know, we see our dogs on top of the rig and driving down an old mountain road, and they open up and they go 400 or 500 yards in up a ridge or down a hollow or valley or canyon, wherever you're at. And then they open, and then they take, you know, they take that track or they start running that animal. You know, we see those things. And my typical handler, they don't have any, they may own pets.
Mm-hmm.
None of my handlers right now are dog hunters in any form and fashion. Bird dogs, right. Beagles, hounds, I don't care what it is. None of them are hunters, retrievers, mm-hmm. None of them. So them seeing what you and I see is two different worlds. And when I say, nah, we can do better, and they're looking at me like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, no, we the dog's got a way more capability than this. But
right.
So I think that's one thing, is that we get to see different worlds for one. And when you talk about the difference, but I told you the first thing, and when you asked me that question, I'm like, I see it because my dog gasses. I can get about a mile out of him. That's mm-hmm. about my limit. Let's just put that in a bowl, because mm-hmm. it could be hot. If it's hotter, I may get less. And if it's cooler and the conditions are right, I may get more. It depends on the terrain. Like, are we climbing up ridges and down hills and him pulling me up and down them? So we'll just use that as a number, a mile. And my thought process is the biggest difference is that lead being attached to the dog, and then me, 260 pounds, holding that dog back like for my end, I'm trying to slow my dog down so my team can keep up with me and that I'm not out front with nobody. But then when you told me your version of it, I'm like, okay, well, there's something else to it other than the lead.
Yeah, because when you had mentioned that, I agreed 100%. If you're holding your dog back, you're obviously, the dog's expending way more energy, you know, trying to pull against you and track at the same time. And then, you know, I described to you a scenario where recently I was backing a canine handler from the Border Patrol, and they have a lead attached to them. It's a 20-foot leather lead, but they go as fast as the dog goes. And the person that's backing that handler has to go as fast as the handler goes. So they're not holding that dog back, and the dog's going off air scent. And so you may be at a slow run, running through the brush and the cactus, keeping up with that handler and that dog.
Yeah. I mean, and that amazes, I mean, again, and then we talked about it. I mean, typically the guys that you're tracking are unarmed, typically.
Nowadays, yes. Five, six years ago, no.
It was probably more the cartel, the mule type thing, right?
Well, 5-6 years ago, it was a lot more of the green dope being backpacked across, and they had a protection element with them because of bandits that were robbing the dope off of the mules. And so they would have an armed, basically a guard with their drug load. And they didn't really have an arm to target law enforcement. They didn't want to get in a shooting with law enforcement. They would always ditch the gun and ditch the bullets because it's a higher sentence if they get caught with it. But they would have those things with them. And if you're creeping through the night, they don't know who you are until you make contact.
So what happened? What happened if you did run up on them at that point? Like
once you identified, you know, so Border Patrol they only have very few dual purpose canines. So only their specialty teams use, like, you know, the full on bite dogs. The majority of the line agents that are canine handlers have tracking and detection only. So their dogs aren't, you know, they're not the spun up, you know, they have Malinois and stuff, but they're not the ones that are so wound up to bite something. And some of the handlers are, you know, they're very good. They know that dog has a propensity to bite. And so they may track, you know, we've got a canine handler with us that if he's using his dog to track a non bite apprehension type of a scenario, he lets that dog run with its toy in its mouth because he knows that the dog's not going to let go of that toy just to avoid any chance of that dog, you know, biting somebody when it's not supposed to.
So the apprehension dog is running with a toy in his mouth so he doesn't apprehend.
You know, like your rubber, you know, whatever you use as the reward.
Yeah,
whatever you're using as your reward. So his particular reward is a rubber wrapped piece of PVC. And that's that dog, when he's tracking, because he is a patrol dog, he usually patrols. When he's tracking like that kind of thing, he uses that toy in its mouth while he's tracking, just so he doesn't run the risk of biting when he's not supposed to.
How does again,
we're going at a fast speed. We're not holding the dog back right there in front of us. The dog, you know, we're in thick brush and that dog might be 10, 15 feet ahead of you and come around a corner and run right into that group before you even have a chance to be there to give a command.
So how does that affect the dog's scenting behavior? Like I know I can run, like Randy Hare does the on target or on target method. And Randy, if a dog don't want to out the toy, Randy won't fight with him. He just says, okay, go ahead and run the car again. When the dog gets an odor, poop, he spits it out, does his thing. So how does that work?
So in this particular instance, this canine handler is a houndsman as well. And I think he has such a good read on his dog that when he puts a muzzle on this dog, the dog gasses out really fast because it's fighting the muzzle. So if he allows it to run with that toy in its mouth and trail, that dog will go for miles trailing with no issues because it's happy.
Wow.
In its mouth. But you put That's a muzzle crazy. On that same dog and it can't go a half mile because he's so wound up with that muzzle on his mouth because he thinks he's going to bite something.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, I see it. I can understand it. But that's a lot. I mean, you know, that dog's trying to breathe and everything else with that toy in his mouth. That's interesting. I mean, that's interesting. Like
it is, but you know, and you're tracking, you know, pretty fresh scent. It's not like you're, you know, running day old scent. You know, it's pretty fresh. It's air scent. You know, they're getting in the scent cone and they're pushing through the brush and you know, It's not like they're like we do where we're trailing, you know, something that's night old or whatnot.
And I don't remember if this was mine and your conversation or mine and somebody else's. And I was down at the APA breed days here recently, so it may have come from down there, but we were talking about roading dogs.
Uh-huh.
And this is going to kind of play into what you and I are talking about. Attention hound hunters and outdoor enthusiasts. Are you ready to experience the thrill of fair chase hunting? If so, check out Southern Hound Hunting Magazine. It's your ultimate guide to all forms of hound hunting, starting in the flat woods of southern Georgia and covering vast terrains across the nation. We bring you genuine stories where the chase is exhilarating as the catch, recipes, and the brag pages that follow. These adventures will take you down memory lane. Whether you're a seasoned pro or a newcomer to the sport, if it's hound worthy, we've got you covered. Join us in this heart-pounding world of hound hunting. To subscribe or to buy the latest swag, go to southernhoundhunting.com. You can also follow along on Facebook and Instagram, where the hunt never ends. Get ready for the real fair chase experience when you join the pack here at Southern Hound Hunting Magazine. But we were talking about, somebody was asking me about a treadmill and asked me if I run my police dogs or my hounds on treadmills. And I told them that I have in the past, but I found that it was not very effective. And the reason why, and if you go get on a treadmill right now and you start running a mile every day for 2 weeks, then go outside and run a mile. Like, it's different. Oh, no, it's different. And I told them that, you know, if I just want to keep my dogs, you know, moving and keep them active, and literally it does limber up the muscles and stuff, and, it they don't get as stiff and stuff as quick. That is, has worked well for me.
Yeah.
But for me to get a dog in shape on a treadmill has not been very effective. Mm-hmm. Now, then we went to the conversation about roading dogs. And I told them that I have roaded dogs, and they were talking about hunting off a horseback. Uh-huh. That they felt like they could ride 25 miles on horseback with their dogs, and their dogs could do it every day.
Uh-huh.
But when you get to running an animal,
right,
it changes the intensity level. It changes everything about what that hound is doing.
Oh, yeah. There's nothing being in hunting shape than hunting.
That's right. I mean, yeah. And it takes me, like, it takes my dogs a good 2 weeks of, and I mean, I've got to give them a break a day or two in there, too, because, you know, if you're running them hard. But it takes me a good 2 weeks to get my dogs in good running shape. But then let's talk about the guys running for the Nationals in the Coyote World. They told me that it takes them 4 months to get their dogs in where they can run for a 3-day weekend.
Oh yeah.
4 months. And they're running them dogs like 13, 20 miles daily.
Well, if you think about it, in a coyote race, they're at an all out sprint the entire race.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even with bears, you know, they'll stop and bay the dogs, and, you know, the dogs get a break. You know, with lions, we're trailing the overnight scent. And then once they're jumped, most of the time after they're jumped, it's not a long race. So they're not really sprinting, you know, like in what I assume the coyote world. I've never hunted, you know, coyotes with dogs, but from the videos and stuff I've seen, them dogs are flat moving the entire time. It's like comparing, you know, a sprinter to, you know, a marathon runner. It's just a different conditioning.
Yeah, it's like when at football, in high school, I come out of football season and I think, man, I'm in shape. I've been working this. We've been 2-a-days in July, and we've been doing this until the end of December. And the first day of wrestling practice, the coach would make us all throw up.
Like, yeah.
Oh, my Lord. Like, them 10-yard sprints in football, and occasionally that 50-yard sprint is nothing like, you know, having to wrestle somebody for 3 minutes at a time that's
just getting in the shape that you're going to be doing. You know, I knew I took a guy hunting that, I mean, he was phenomenal shape. He was an officer and rode bikes and lifted weights and hot and ran and did all these things all the time. He just told me how fast he was just going to run up the mountain and everything else. Once we got into that fall and all that loose rock and everything else, he wasn't such in shape as he thought he was.
You broke him, didn't you?
I said, slow and steady in the race.
It changed his thought process, didn't it?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I told him, I said, I don't ever run. I just hike after these hounds. And he's like, oh, I'll be able to keep up with the dogs. I was like, yeah, good luck, buddy.
It's funny you say that. Last year we were hunting and Chelsea, she works out every day. She mm-hmm. does some plyo CrossFit something every day. And she's on me. She's like, you need to get off the couch and you need to do this. And it was the January 3rd last year. We got after bear. And before my day was over with, we left the truck at 7 that morning. And we didn't get back. I didn't get back to the truck until 9 something at night. And I covered 14 some point miles. I don't know. Well, about 9 miles into that, I lost her.
Yeah.
And so she ended up going to the truck, coming around to pick me up, you know, after it was all said and done. And I said, yeah, I said, how's those workouts working for you? Yeah, I said, yeah. It's different when you're trucking through the mountains than it is doing that.
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure.
But yeah. So back to the dogs, like it does intrigue me that you guys are running completely different than ours. I know for a fact that us holding our dogs back is a big part of why we are gassing our dogs at that, you know, in that mile range.
Right.
Now we have a Hanoverian hound, a Hanno, and now he tracks very slow, very methodically. Like, you know, he just kind of works his way through. Now he can keep tracking on and on, but there is no lead pressure really. Like you just walk behind him basically and,
yeah,
you're moving at the same pace he is.
Yeah.
So he's definitely got a lot of more. He's got a lot more duration to him.
Right.
Than my dog. That my dog, if I could show, you know, paint you a picture of his profile, and for the guys listening, his profile is when he is in tracking mode for me to read to say he is actually in odor. He looks like a sled dog. Yeah. I mean, his butt's down. His head's below his shoulders. I mean, you can see his shoulder blades working, like when he's coming up out of those strides, like that's what he looks like.
Yeah.
When he's tracking.
He's pulling you.
And another thing too, Travis, that I've thought about, and I may not quote this exactly right, but they say for every 15 minutes of nose work, and I use this for my detection dogs, but what you're telling me, I think it could be implemented with what we're talking about. For every 15 minutes of nose work is like that dog completed a mile. So if you're tracking a mile with your dogs, our dogs, then it's like they're tracking 5 because they're getting 15, 15, 15. That's 4 miles. And then they're doing a mile on top of that. So they're technically, in theory, and again, I'm speaking theoretically,
right,
that they could be putting 5 miles into our one.
Right.
So that may have some influence on what's going on in the tracking world.
That could, you know, and I could see that, you know, especially on the leash side, but that same correlation would be true of the hound. You know, if they're tracking for every 15 minutes, they're going that extra mile and everything else. So the correlation of the amount of time they're tracking and the distance they've traveled would be essentially the same without outside influence, like the leash that's pulling back on that dog and things like that.
Well, and let's go right back to the conversation we just had about the treadmill and the roading. Is it a playing into effect that our dogs aren't conditioned the same?
I would agree that they're not conditioned the same. You know, if you take a normal police dog that spends its 9 to 5 in a car, getting out, occasionally walking around a car, sniffing, occasionally, you know, maybe getting out and tracking somebody, you know, a kid that left its house or whatever like that, short distance and stuff. And then, you know, with my agency now, we get sent all over the Western U.S. they take that canine from, say, you know, Wyoming, South Dakota, wherever, send it down to southern Arizona along the border, completely different terrain, completely different scenario. Now you're expecting that dog to get out and track for miles and hours on end. You know, that definitely would play into the conditioning of that dog, because it's not conditioned to that kind of environment and that kind of a scenario.
Well, and that's going to lead me to another thought that I had a Mallee before my little Dutchie I got now. I had a Mallee before him. Mm-hmm. And if I carried him in my car for 12 hours, the dog never shut down. He was in there. He was burning so much energy during the day. If I got a call at 4 or 5 o'clock in the evening, I knew that I was good for about 400 or 500 yards, and he's gassed.
Right.
Because he never shut himself down in a car. He just bam, 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 bam. I mean, rat on acid.
Like, it's similar to like your rig dogs. Look how much worn out your rig dogs are from balancing up there on that platform, you know, during the day. You know, you run them all day long up there on the platform, they're tired. Well, if your police dog's doing the same thing in the back seat, you know, constantly moving on his legs and stuff, he's consuming a ton of energy.
Yep. So would that play into some effect? I don't know how the dogs you're with are acting, but my dog now, like, and that was one of the criteria when I went to pick my, because I knew this was going to be my last dog. Me and him's going to retire together. He's going to lay on the couch and I'm going hunting and fishing. But one of the criteria when I got this particular dog was he didn't bark in the car. Mm-hmm. I can't stand that. And I got him at 11 months old too. So I got him a lot younger than the Mallee, which I got at 16 months old. But I wanted a quiet dog, and I wanted a dog that did not pace the whole time. I didn't want that nervous energy. I didn't want that nervous energy. I wanted a dog that laid down, mm-hmm. nothing out of him. And when you opened that door and cracked the lead on him, he's ready to go to work.
Yeah. And I can't say 100% for all the dogs that I've been around and worked with, but I know a couple of the dogs fit that same bill. They're just relaxed in the truck. When you open the door, if you're letting them out to go to the bathroom, they just kind of haphazardly jump out. They're not like the hounds that bail out and go running all over the place looking for something to pee on or whatever, but they just kind of get out. You know, they know the drill. You know, they've been conditioned to, okay, it's time to work. It's time to get out and blow out, you know, or whatever. And so they don't bark in the vehicle. They're pretty mellow. The one dog actually, a couple years ago, we actually were training the dog to be deployed from a TV. And so the handler was in front seat. The dog was between us. And for the first probably 30 minutes, we put a muzzle on the dog just because we weren't sure how the dog would react. And neither one of us wanted to get bit, because I'm driving and it's nighttime, it's dark. So there's a lot of new things, a lot of moving parts. And so we put the dog between us on the floor. Once he figured it out, after about 30 minutes, he just laid on the floor until we stopped or opened the doors or something like that. He was content just laying on the floor and being mellow. And he's a Malinois, you know, so not very characteristic of a Malinois. Mm-hmm. But, you know,
was he patrolled or apprehension or just tracking?
He was apprehension. He's full service. But he's just a good dog, you know, and probably a good handler as well. You know, that handler is a really good handler.
And, you know, something else, I mean, just sitting here thinking about, you're changing, you know, I don't know if people's picking up on this, but you're changing environments. Okay. So you went from doing whatever was normal to him. Now you've got him on a UTV. Now you've got him in between two people. I know that stress, and I'm not saying for him, but you brought up a good point. Stress plays a big factor in that too.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Like, you know, when the air dogs get stressed, a lot of times they'll just shut down.
Yeah.
And maybe not even be out of shape. Just, you know, I'm done for right now. So, which I'm assuming that if those are Border Patrol dogs, they are very well acclimated to the things that they need to do.
And that would be where we'd have to kind of separate the two different dogs. So you've got like our agency that the dogs are coming from everywhere, and the Border Patrol dogs that are, you know, they're stationed down there. So they're used to it. They do it day in and day out. That's their whole job. But, you know, when I talk to some of those handlers asking about the longevity and, you know, and the endurance, they'll be like, you know, my dog's got four in him, and then I got to give him, you know, a 2-hour break or whatever before I can go track another group. He's got four tracks in him before I can go track another group. And they don't divide it up by miles, because you just never know how far you're going to be tracking. But they know their dog well enough to say, we can deploy four times, and then I've got to take my dog and he's got to chill out for a while, you know, take a nap, whatever he's going to do. But, you know, it's with a hound, it's like, you know, okay, so where's the comparison? How do you compare that? Because the way they run their dogs down there, they're not holding tight to that leash. They may slow them down, like when we get to these really nasty cactus patches, the choya. So they're not getting drugged through the choya, you know, and trying to follow the dog because the dog can go through it and we can't quite as easy. But most of the time that lead's pretty loose, you know, pretty loose. It's just dragging and it's kind of running through their hand back and forth as they're following the dog. So, you know, where's the correlation between the hound that's running completely unrestricted in that same environment and that dog that's conditioned to it, that's not really being held back? Why is there that breakdown, you know, in the endurance on that? You know, that's kind of what I've always kind of geeked out on, trying to figure out, you know, why is this dog not have the same endurance as, you know, a hound, for instance?
Yeah, and I, you know, sitting here just, you know, kind of wheels are turning. Our hounds are not superior to the working dog. As much as I would like to say they are, I would say they're equal. Uh-huh. Like our working dogs, most of the dogs that I'm fooling with, you said it, I mean, their drives are over the top.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they will literally work until they pass out. And you talk about tracking. I was on a track. I don't know. Maybe it was back in August or September. It was humid. It was hot.
Mm-hmm.
It was in the evening. Humidity was really high here. And the guy took off running. And one of my perimeter units seen him coming up a creek. So I drove around to where he had seen him. We put on the track, and this ridge was straight up and down. I mean, it was like climbing a horse's face, I'll say. And we took off, and we got up around some ledges. And, I mean, Pino was just like flat out. I mean, he was pulling me up the mountain, like honestly. Like he was just, I mean, he was dug in and gone. We got around this a little outcrop. And he took a left-hand turn. He was still parallel. He was still going at a 45 up this steep ridge. And when he got up another outcrop, he turned and started parallel. And I said, oh, we got him now. Like, he's gassed. He's trying to – well, then we got around the ridge about 40 or 50 yards, and he turned and was going straight back down to the creek. Well, by the time we got about halfway down the ridge, the perimeter unit hollered out, you know, I could hear him. They'd make con. He'd run right up in the perimeter unit.
Oh, okay.
In the creek. So they called him. What I was going to say is when I got stopped and got Pino stopped and took, you know, I took the lead off the harness and put it back onto his collar, he was falling over.
Yeah.
Like he was literally like, you know, gassing and falling over. So, okay. I got him back down to the creek and let him get some water and got him up into the car, turned the air conditioner on, but it scared me because he was on the brink of that heat exhaustion.
Yeah.
But he was pulling me, like, I knew I was right there because he was pulling me so hard. Like I couldn't hold him back, and we were going straight up. Like,
yeah.
Straight up. Mm-hmm. So that was a very short track. I mean, I'm going to say it was probably less than 500 yards total. But it felt like 2 miles, like going the way we did and up, you know, down across the creek and up the ridge. So, that was his limit for sure. But I played a lot of that into the humidity.
Yeah.
So, but anyway,
the humidity, it affects them because we're not humid out here. And if we get a humid day, like we get these monsoon storms that come in the summer and you try to go out and run, the hounds don't last as long in the humidity. I don't last as long in the humidity.
Yeah. But I don't have a very good answer. I've got a lot of theories like we've talked, but I don't have a go-to. Yes, this is a difference. I see the same thing you see. I see, you know, our dogs are good for a mile and a half. You know, the Hanno could probably go 4 or 5.
Yeah.
But if we have a perimeter set up, you're not going that far. I mean, you're never going to. You're very seldom do we need to even go a mile. I mean, usually within that 1,000 yard, half a mile range, you're caught.
Yeah.
And again, we're putting a lot of back pressure on our dogs trying to slow them down, which is completely opposite. But even running our dogs in two different styles, we're getting the same result.
Right.
So yeah. It's got to be something. Like, it's got to be something that we're both doing.
Yeah. Yeah. It'd be interesting to see, like, more of a standard, like the way you guys run your tracking dogs, if you would catch up to those groups. Because typically what happens, like, especially during the day, when you're tracking a group of illegals, they hear you coming, they get up and they run. I mean, they flat out run, and then they'll bust up like a covey of quail. And so you'll have people going every direction. Usually the canine handler will find the one that's hiding in the brush or something. And the rest of us are chasing, you know, just visual sight chasing out through the, you know, the mountains and the rocks and the hills and stuff. And so it'd be interesting with holding back the dog and moving the track at a slower pace. Cause you know, a lot of times we don't know how far we are behind them. You know, if they've made it, cause we got to catch them before they get to where their loadout spot is, you know, before they get to the highway or wherever their predetermined location is, or wherever their, you know, radio or their phone is telling them to go. We have to catch them before they get there. They load out and it's game over. You know, it sucks to track them all the way up to a road and be like, oh, they loaded out. I just wasted 3 hours tracking this group and they already loaded out.
Well, I would say without a perimeter, that would affect our tracking time. Like we would be further behind because we're not running like you guys. But I do know the last couple of training days that we've had, I've been doing a lot of off lead. Every one of our dogs is running off lead. Uh-huh. And the purpose of me doing that is to show my guys how fast that dog can get to the end game. So we did, and again, I know everybody's going to laugh, but we laid our track, our old tracks, because I've got too many people. I can't do 8, 6, 10 hour tracks. I can't do it. Right. So we laid our old track, put the dog on the beginning of the track, and we cut them loose.
Mm-hmm.
And those dogs, half mile tracks, which is 1,000 yards.
Yeah.
Those half mile tracks, the dogs were finding them in 2 to 4 minutes tops.
Uh-huh.
And I'm probably 4 minutes is probably giving them a lot of space because it was quicker than that.
Right.
So then the next series that I did is I done the same track 30 minutes old.
Uh-huh.
With the handler on the dog.
Right.
15 to 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is, I will say, a lot of that is the handlers that are still learning and still reading their dogs and getting off track and having to bring the dog back on track. So a lot of that goes in there. But I done that exercise just to show them that, hey, the dog knows what he's doing.
Right.
It's you that I'm trying to teach. And if this dog can find this person an hour old track, a half a mile in less than 5 minutes.
Uh-huh.
Like it shouldn't take you 15 minutes to do it.
Right.
So, but I will say that when we run them off lead, the dogs were not gassed like they were on lead.
Right.
They were not.
Well, yeah, they don't have that anchor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know.
So it's interesting. Like I said, I don't have an exact answer, but I see the same results, even though we're doing the same task in a different style, we're getting the same results.
Right. And that's, you know, you talk about that perimeter, and there's sometimes there's another road ahead that you can send another agent up ahead to cut for the sign. You can say, hey, I'm on, you know, a waffle track, sign a 4, or if they're all on carpet or whatever, you can send them ahead to cut ahead and try to get ahead of it and, you know, and pin it in between. You know, we've done that, you know, before where we've been able to pin them in between, and then they'll usually lay up. And like the style of tracking where if you're holding the dog back, you can just walk right into where they're laid up at, you know, no problem. But if you don't have that element, like, you know, you're calling a perimeter, mm-hmm. if you don't have that, I don't know that you'd catch up to these ones, you know, as you're just pushing them. Cause there's times that even on foot without a dog, you can see them in front of you and they can see you. And they just don't stop and you don't stop. And you just keep pushing until somebody can finally get out in front of them and lay them up or get them put down. Cause you're not gaining any distance and they're not gaining any distance. And you're just, it's like the constantly moving pendulum, you know, you can't catch mm-hmm. up to it, you grab hold of it.
Yeah. I mean, that's crazy. And you got to make up time. I get it. Like you got to make up time.
Yeah. And you don't want to leave the track. I mean, if you visually see them, it's all right, but then you get into the thick stuff. And if you left the track trying to catch up to them, then you got to reacquire the track and start pushing the track through the thick stuff until you can see them again, or the tracking conditions are better or whatever. So when you're coming in behind, you're always behind.
Yes. No, that's, and like I said, we, I don't say we live and die by the perimeter, but it's a big part of our success. I'll say that.
It's definitely a force multiplier for sure.
Yeah. You make them lay down, they can get caught. They get caught, right, don't they?
We do the same thing with helicopter. You know, a lot of times is if we can't get into them and they're pushing hard, you know, they'll bring a helicopter in and lay them down, or they'll bring the drone in and they'll fly the drone really low and they'll hear the drone. So then they'll brush up. And the helicopter's kind of funny working with it, you know, under night vision, is the helicopter will put the midnight sun on a clump of bushes, but the bodies are never in that clump of bushes, but the bodies don't move because they think the helicopter can kind of see them. So they stay there, and the helicopter will put their laser pointer on the bush that actually has the body. And then we just walk straight in with our MVGs and grab the bodies that are underneath the laser pointer, not under the midnight sun.
Oh, makes sense.
Yeah.
Makes good sense. Yeah. That's a pretty good idea. So any other dog related questions or thoughts?
No, that's just what I want to bounce off you, you know, just some of those differences between the two. And I didn't figure there was like a, this is why, you know, this is the answer to your question. It's just nice to hear other perspectives on it and get some feedback on it. Cause you know, I figured it had to do with maybe the conditioning and the way that the dogs are run and handled, you know, something different with the police dogs and our hounds is most of us, even though we might hunt multiple game, the hounds are kind of single purpose, you know, for just the aspect of everything they're doing is tracking, trailing and chasing, you know? So it's not like that dog's out there and has to learn how to track and then has to go learn how to detect drugs in a car and then learn how to search, you know, a building, you know, and things like that. So they don't have all those different tools in their belt. They kind of have that one tool. They got their nose and they track and trail animals for us. So it's, you know, I've always thought maybe that has a little bit to play into it as well, because it's kind of a single driven factor versus a multi driven factor.
Yeah. And do you think, like, have you seen, like, if you've got a dog that's single purpose tracking and he's out there day in and day out and day in and day out, does that range not change?
So the range changes, and they're definitely in better shape than dogs that come from out of the area. But they don't, you know, like we had one, it's been several years ago, and it was over in a different area where we're a lot further away from the border. That dog pushed that track for about 8 miles, and then that was it, you know, and then we pushed it on foot from there on. And another canine handler cut another road ahead of us, had the sign, and he started pushing the sign from there and moved on. And then that canine handler, you know, he turned around and got the closest road to get his dog picked up. You know, because the dog was gassed, you know, it's springtime. It's not like it's super hot. It's 75 out. It's pretty dry.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. Like I said, we're getting the same results on the back end of it. And I can run my dogs off lead and I see the benefits of it. Mm-hmm. Like and you and I talked about this too. I know we talked about the vests and the harnesses.
Yeah.
You know, we know that restricts them in their breathing, but you said y'all were running a very small harness.
Yep.
On yours. And I do know that some of my guys are running the whole vests.
Right.
That go down, cover the flanks and everything. Mm-hmm. I'm not, in the wintertime, I'd probably be all right with it, but I want to be as least constrictive to my dog as I can be.
Yeah, for sure. Maybe one of the other things, like, you know, like you were talking about why the condition doesn't change, is maybe it's because they get a bunch of those short ones, you know, that 1 mile, that 2 mile track, and they don't get those long 8 mile tracks. So they don't actually get the chance, just like we talked about, you know, sprinters and marathon runners, they don't get the chance to get conditioned for that longer track on a regular basis. You know, that's not something they're doing every single day. They're going out and tracking every day, but it's the shorter races. It's kind of like the difference between the at least in my world, the endurance of a bear dog versus a lion dog. You know, the lion dog doesn't have to have as big a lungs. It doesn't have to be in as good a shape because they're slow trailing mostly, or fast trailing. And the race is a sprint because lions have small lungs. Where a bear race, he might be running that bear for 30 miles at a lope, you know, where they're trotting along the whole time. And so they're just that they get conditioned better than a lion dog. And that might be a more accurate comparison, but just that longer track, they don't get conditioned to that because they're not doing that longer track all the time. They're doing the shorter tracks most of the time.
Yeah. I mean, and that brings up two good points. Like I do notice, and I don't want to offend anybody, I'm sorry, but I do notice that a lot of the lion dogs are heavier boned, heavier built dogs. And they may not be like huge dogs, but they're not put up the same as my dogs. And I'm using mine as a reference, not everybody else's. Like if you go on and start looking at other dogs, like you guys out West, I mean, I would look at that dog and be like, they ain't catching no bear here, you know, in my mind.
Right.
You know, so the structure and makeup of the dog is different there. And I don't know what my second point was now, but yeah, we're running. I mean, I'm running 8-10 miles a day and it's up and down and up and down. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it would be like, training a quarter horse to run the barrels and a thoroughbred to run the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah. Yep.
So you condition yourself to what you're doing. So, I mean, I think all of those factors play into it, honestly.
Yeah, I would agree.
I think we probably got it narrowed down. It's just, it may be the whole gamut. It may be all of those things that are affecting them.
There's too many factors to say one.
Yes. Yes, for sure. So, well, Travis, I appreciate the question and the conversation because I always think about that. I always think about, I compare our police dogs to the hounds, not just mine, but hounds in general a lot. And I feel like, and I think I said at the beginning this, we don't get the full capacity of our police dogs that we get out of our hounds. If we could take that lead off of them and just say, go get them, like we'd probably be a whole lot more successful. Like we would.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you spending the evening with me, and I appreciate the question.
Hey, thanks, Heath. I appreciate it.
All right, Travis, thank you for helping us teach, train, and learn.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.